Welcome to Holzweiler Take a Moment podcast, a space to block out the noise and let inspiration flow. My name is Suzanne Holzweiler. I started Holzweiler together with my brother Andreas and my sister-in-law Maria. After running a business for 10 years, I developed a burnout, and the remedy for this was quite literally to take a moment. I shifted my lifestyle to allow for a space for wellness, meditation, and rest. Inspired by this, Take a Moment with Holzweiler is our new podcast where we delve deep into the stories of the people who inspire us. In the rush of the working week, when everyone is dashing from meeting to meeting, it's hard to find the time to let creativity flow. Therefore, we have a meeting-free Wednesday in Holzweiler, and we thought, what better day to launch our weekly episode than Wednesday? Today's guest is such a brilliant creative. If I could move like him when I dance in the mornings, like I do, that would be the dream. I always get so inspired when we meet and discuss everything from fashion to wellness and just life. Together with Suleiman Malik and Bilal Malik, he founded the Crick Crew back in 2006. Fun fact, that's actually the same year as Andreas and I founded Holzweiler Agency. In 2009, Crick Crew won the Norwegian Got Talent show and signed an artist contract with Sony Music. Today, they're known as the Crick Style, and they are an ever-growing family of amazing dancers and talents, spreading so much joy and inspiration through their social channels, where they have 8.1 million followers on Instagram and TikTok. They're also involved in artist management, shows, judging in events and competitions, and provide choreography for the K-pop music industry, just to mention a few things. I am so happy to have you on the podcast. Welcome, Nasir Sirikan.
Thank you so much, and I'm so happy to be here as well.
Yeah, so how are you today?
I'm feeling great. The sun has come out, and everybody's just like, you know, staring up to the skies.
I know, it's so amazing.
It feels like forever since the sun have come out like this. So yeah, I feel like a natural glow on everybody's faces today.
And yeah.
Including myself.
You just took your first meeting outside our office.
Exactly. Yeah. I had to sit down in the sun and just, you know, bathe and soak into the sunset.
Yeah, we're so lucky with this office location.
You are.
Yeah, and the springtime is just so special.
It is.
Yeah. You just ended Ramadan last week.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so how did you... you say like how did you celebrate it this year? Is that what you say?
Or yeah. So the end of Ramadan is that we have something called Eid, which is basically the celebration.
Yeah.
That day, you're not allowed to fast. This is only meant to celebrate and is one of two type of celebrations that Muslims have in a year. And so we did 30 days this year, 30 days of fasting, meaning that you refrain from eating and drinking while the sun is up. And of course, I feel the most important about this Ramadan was thinking about others, so empathy globally, and also not only empathy, but also getting in touch with yourself, rethinking values, rethinking like your decisions, your priority, and you know, spending time with family is very important again. And it just basically sharpens who you are as a human being. You know, so and when you're not eating and when you're not always busy, you know, like at a cafe or a dinner and these kind of things, and you're focusing on humanity, on God, on your belief, it just basically gives you a little bit more weight, if I could say, like speaking to people now versus before Ramadan, I feel a little bit deeper, you know, but not in a way where I go too deep, but I feel like it's easier for me to connect with all types of people. Whereas before I would be a little bit more materialistic in terms of what I do and my field of work. But now I feel like I'm more on a human plane. So
that's so beautiful.
So after Ramadan, it basically resets, you know, like this is all what I say every year as well. It's like the great reset just for yourself, you know.
Everyone should do that.
100%.
And like 30 days, it's a long time.
It's a long time, but this year was easy because this year it started with the sunset at around 6 6:30.
Okay.
Meaning like you just skip lunch.
Yeah.
And then you basically eat dinner. You know what I mean? Like breakfast and lunch and then you eat dinner.
Yeah.
But the years before, we had a sunset starting from everything from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. So that would almost be like 20 hours.
Mm.
And that is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This year you actually didn't do so much work, right? You just tuned out. And
every year is a little bit different. Mm. We've had years where we have been traveling and working, you know, like while fasting.
Okay.
Which is also, you know, like it's heavy, but at the same time, it keeps you busy. So you forget that you fast.
Yeah.
But this year, we basically stayed home. We said no to all works and traveling.
Mm.
Just to kind of like focus because we felt like we needed it, especially with so much happening in the world.
Yeah.
So we took that time off, and this year was so good because we got to really, really ask ourselves questions that we can't while being on the road, while being, you know, like in high tempo, you know, what do I really feel right now?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, do I feel good about this and that? So this year was no work, just for the purpose of us basically getting our feet back on the ground and just like understanding where we are in life.
Mm. I think the power of that, you know, the power of, I'm reading a book at the moment called Resting.
Nice.
And you know, just the power of a rest, it's so underestimated, you know, and we are just living in this very fast-paced society where
Definitely.
It's all about work, and you
all
know, taking
time.
30 days off, it's just unheard of. And it's, and I actually believe that by resting more, that's why I'm so inspired of like your month, you know, your Ramadan month now. I think we accomplish so much more.
It is, and it's also about discipline.
Yeah,
because you have to wake up. And you don't have to, but it's recommended that you eat something before you sleep, you know, and it could be like just as simple as a glass of milk and dates or water or something like this. But you have to pray before you go to sleep, you know, so that's like for me to wake up or stay up to like 3-4 a.m. and then do my prayers like before I go to sleep. The last thing I think of is not scrolling through Instagram and TikTok and these things. The last thing I think about is basically just connecting with God and also trying to put myself, my vulnerabilities out there for someone, you know, and just talking about this. And that's what I sleep with. And then I wake up to that. So, Ramadan is a very spiritual and very good for self-reflecting and also reflecting on your surroundings.
Mm. So beautiful. We could talk about that the whole episode, but next time.
Next one.
So tell us, like, who is Quickstyle and how did this fairy tale start?
This definitely feels like a fairy tale. Quickstyle started all the way back in, I think it was high school. So it was me, the twins, Suleiman and Bilal. And we met in school where we shared the same passion, you know, because we're all of us born in 1991. And let's say 2003, 2004, all the kids would play football. All the kids would do sports. You know, this is very typical Norwegian upbringing. You know, they would go to a sports club and stuff where we were listening to MJ. So we were listening to the same music and we were like,
nice.
This is a world where, you know, you had MTV going all the time.
Yeah.
And then you had MJ and everybody was talking about, you know, Michael Jackson. And we would see his stage performance and it was just so captivating, you know, and so powerful.
I was such a big fan.
And you will still never see anything like that today, you know. So we were raised, I would say, in the golden era of entertainment as well. So being inspired by that, we used to spend our time off, you know, like in the school breaks, we would run to my house and we would watch Michael Jackson's music videos and stage performances. And that basically stuck to us so much that we started pursuing dance by ourselves. And so I think we started in early 2004, maybe end of 2003. That's when we started dancing.
Okay.
And we started, you know, like
20 years ago.
Yeah. So we went to a place called X-Ray, which is a youth club in Oslo.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other, you know, great personalities and characters that have come from that
yeah.
club. MadCon, Carpe Diem, El Carpe came from that place. So there's a lot of people who have like a connection to that place. Mm. So we went there, we started, we auditioned for a group, which is like a kind of like a team. So it was us three and I think seven other girls.
Okay.
That was like the very beginning when we started putting our time into this. Mm. Just to keep things short, fast forwarding 3-4 years later, we won Norwegian's Got Talent. And that was because we were so passionate about what we were doing that we spent 6 to 8 hours every day just practicing, you know, and it didn't feel like 6 hours because we just, you know, wanted to do it all the time, you know, at school, at home, while waiting for the bus. You know, it was just like a crazy thing that took over. And after we won Norwegian's Got Talent, that's when we signed the artist contract with Sony,
yeah.
Which was a little bit special because they had to request the signing from the main office in New York.
Okay.
So they were, you know, like there was a few like discussions on like, what do you like? How do we sign a dance group? Like what? How can we make money basically out of them? And that was we learned a lot from that because we also didn't really know. We never made money from dance before, you know, like we made money once and that was like, I think we got 500 kroners each. Mm. That was like our first time getting paid. And I still remember it today. Like we sat down on the floor actually at a Subway after doing the show and I took out the envelope and I was like, guys, this is our first pay as dancers, you know? And I still remember, you know, giving out 500 to each and the joy we felt because... Yeah. You just made money out of something that you really love doing, you know? That was the first kind of like taste of, I would say, success early on. Yeah.
But I also think because, I remember when you won that competition. And, you know, I didn't know you guys then, of course. But it was so common that all of these competitions, it was about singing, you know, artist performance.
Exactly.
So you, what you did was so new. And wasn't it... After that, there was also like a TV show that was like this dance crew TV show.
It was.
That was you guys starting
the dance crew TV show. I think like that was only for one season.
Yeah, if it was the, only one that, season. If yeah, that's yeah, the one I you're remember. Talking about,
and they asked me to judge, so I was judging.
Okay, I didn't know.
So
that.
I was sitting in the judge panel with Thea Bai and Jan Fredrik Harsen.
Yeah, it was so fun.
Yeah.
I love that program.
So the concept was really cool because you got to challenge set groups that were already casted. Mm.
Was like a celebrity that was dancing with them, right?
Yes. Yeah. So you had, I think the winner of that competition was Fingern.
Yeah, it was.
With Absence, I think.
Yeah.
So that was really cool twist to the whole thing because it made it easy for people to watch because they would know that one person in that crew, you know? And the whole concept was having the celebrity being a part of the crew.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was really cool. Mm. And so after we basically won Norwegian's Got Talent and the whole thing just started like spiraling into touring around Norway with Sony, we also made our own content. That was basically the start of our content creation. Because we took the money from the prize money and then we rented our own place, which today is Quickstyle Studio, which is a studio where we have classes for kids, for everyone actually, and has become like this hub of creativity, which has dance in the foundation.
It's so nice.
And it's, I think it's 14 years. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but it started out first as a place where we needed to create content and practice. So we basically bought a camera, we placed it in front of us, we would record our practices and then we just post it on YouTube. But originally just for us to watch it later or send it to our friends and family. That was the whole reason for us.
So fun how things start.
Exactly.
Get something else.
So
what happened from there to being like a dance studio?
From that moment we got recognized, I think it was Spain first, so we were booked to Spain.
Okay.
And then that was weird because we started seeing comments from different languages and then our video went from 300 views to like 10,000 to 100,000 and then we're like, who are all these people, because we weren't used to social media that way. And it was early on. YouTube didn't have dance videos that time. There was like, you could see like the same dance video all over again because it was basically less than 50 dance videos on the internet, you know? And now it's 50,000 a day, you know?
Yeah.
So so that time was very special. We got booked to Spain, UK, and then all around Europe. And then we, again, like everything else, it grew. We also grew as dancers. We took a lot of classes. We would take workshops almost everywhere we went. Every trip we went, we took other people's classes just to kind of develop our own skill sets as well. And that took us to touring in the United States. That took us to touring in Japan. That took us to this fairy tale, like you're talking about, all around the world. And before we knew it, once we did that for about 6, 7, 8 years, and now we're like in 2017, 2018, then the Korean pop industry saw us. And then they recognized us and they reached out to us for us to do choreography for their artists.
Wow, it's
and
so
the
amazing.
First group that reached out was BTS, which is like, I would say, one of the biggest K-pop group that has ever existed. So they reached out to us in their very early stage, and was the way they reached out was very humble. It was super like, we're such a big fans of Quickstyle. We would be honored if you guys could create a choreography for our group called BTS. But at that time, nobody heard of BTS. You know, like I'd never heard of BTS. I was like, and we wanted to do it basically just because we've always wanted to do a Korean pop choreography. So it just aligned perfectly. And next to that, we also opened a studio in China, in Chengdu. So that was also a very fun journey. Also another fairy tale to talk about.
You still have the dance studio in
the Chengdu? Studio now is basically closed because it was just too much happening with COVID. You know, like,
oh, yeah, of course.
It was really hard. Yeah, they weren't able to run the studio for almost 2 to 3 years. Which was really bad for the for everything like this. Even in Norway, we took a hit. So, but again, we're super open to scale and do this again. We're looking at Tokyo, we're looking at Seoul, we're looking into different places and countries to expand.
Love, like, when I talk to you, I feel that the world is so small.
It should be. It should be for everyone, right?
Yeah. And then one day, oh no, I'm in India. Oh, I'm in Bangkok. I, you know, you just travel and you just...
We're blessed.
And you do it so effortlessly, I feel.
We're blessed. The thing is, we're lucky because our travel started very early on. Like we started traveling when we were 13.
Okay.
I'm 33, you know.
Yeah.
I think 33 or 32. I'm not really sure.
God, you started 32. That young. Crazy.
So we started traveling very early. And so traveling for us now, it could be like 100 travels a year. And the way we take it, it would feel like 10, you know. Where if we started this, if we started traveling this time, I think it would be too much for us to handle. Because it would just be like, you know, the time zones and then traveling off and on plane and then hotels and then on the stage. So it's a lot of things. But it has been surprisingly easy up till now. And I hope it will be.
Maria, she always says that the good thing about like us in Holzweiler, you know, because we're also three founders.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So she always says like the good thing about being three is that because sometimes it's rough times.
Yes.
And it's not only a Dance on Roses, you know, and when it's rough, being three.
I like the reference.
Always one of us has our head above the water. You know, we're not like under the water at the same time, all three of us, which is actually a really great strength that. So then the other one pulls up the rest and it's so good. So how do you feel? What's a good thing about being three founders?
It's fun that you say what you just said because it feels like you were always there for some reason, because we have that as well as one of our greatest strengths is that when one or two feel like, you know, lost motivation or feel like, where are we heading with this?
Yeah,
you know, there's always one of us who are like, you know, snapping us back into the journey and are like, don't forget this. So there's a lot of reminding. There's a lot of, you know, like pulling each other, like you say, pulling each other out of the mud. And also being three, I've read a few places that being three is harder than being two.
Okay.
But I feel like that is for those who are not that close, you know, because you're close enough, you're very transparent, you're very honest.
Yeah.
You know that you're going to be together for the rest of your life. So there's no risk in you know, like being very blunt and also saying what you're, you have on your mind. So with us...
Do you also have family bonds to the twins? Because they're also twins.
Yeah, they're twins.
Yeah.
We are like brothers, I would say. I don't think anyone else that knows us think different. But we're not in blood. But we basically spent more than half of our lives together. And when I say spent, I mean spent. Like not like we've worked together for half of our lives. It's we wake up, what's up? We go to travels, we come back from whatever country, and then we're like, see you later. So that's basically our relationship. We spend our time together.
Family.
We're family, in other words. And pulling each other out of the mud, inspiring each other, and also being our best and worst kind of like critique. So we're like always, you know, giving each other critiques about things that where we know that he wants the best for me.
Yeah.
So there's no ego. There's no
It's so nice.
You know what I mean? There's no like, I feel like this was a hit on me. It was basically, it wasn't easy for him to give me that critique. You know, he could ignore it, but he chose to give it. So I have to consider what's being said, you know, and this is the level of respect and discipline, but it takes time to get there because we've been young together and we've, you know, like it's hard to translate a few things emotionally, you know. So I feel like emotionally we've grown together. We've learned to understand that not everything comes from a bad place. Most of the things comes from a good place, but maybe we're not good enough to communicate it that way, you know. So it has been a great journey. So for us, we feel when we step into a room together, the three of us, we feel very powerful.
You are. So, I can confirm.
But that's how we feel in terms of like, not powerful
but outwards, I understand what
you mean. We feel very safe with each other, you know. And that is, I know that whatever happens, I would have, you know, and the same with them. We would have each other.
I can totally relate to that too, you know, and of course, you know, today you're here, only you, and I also do a lot of things alone, you know, without Andreas Maria, and it's fine, you know. I always feel like, not always, but maybe if we have like a big dinner in Paris or something and I'm the only one hosting it, I always feel very half.
Right.
But I still do it, of course, but when the three of us are together, like when we're doing our show, for instance, I just love that time. Because
it's the full circle.
And it's I think it's the powerful feeling because you just feel so secure, kind of.
Definitely.
Because you know that we just would go so well together. We feel each other out. It's fine.
Yeah. And I feel like you are in a different phase from us because you have scaled to the point where you have to be in different places.
Yeah.
Right? Where we are still in the place where we are needed together. But we're transitioning into a phase now where we are open.
Okay.
To kind of, because we're also expanding the amount of people in our team, you know. We are the founders, but we are seven or more people that are keeping things going. And then we are, you know, we can be up to 50 people as well if we want to, you
know. It's so
amazing. But the three of us, we have meetings, I think almost... We try to do every day just to check on each other, just to be like, how are you feeling? You know, like, and then maybe one day I feel really demotivated and then we talk each other and like talk about it, you know, and that gives this kind of like, we don't feel easily budged, you know, we feel much stronger. So we try to do daily, just a checkup. And then we have a weekly kind of like go through plans and everything.
Nice.
So we speak a lot to each other, which is really nice.
So nice.
And like you said, together powerful, but we also we have trained to kind of like carry each other's mindset with each other. So
exactly.
Me sitting here now, I'm thinking with three brains.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like you also know that you have to do the same when you're working in your field of work as well with Holzweile, because you're representing a whole name and a whole brand, and you're representing everyone in the office as well. So you have to think about everyone as, you know.
So nice. You've been partnering with so many amazing artists around the world, and it's really like around the world, you know, from Karpe in Norway to Diljit Dosanjh in India to Usher, BTS, like you mentioned. How does this happen?
It's hard to say. It's like, it sounds cliche, but when you put your mind to it, and you're not just putting your mind to it, but you're adding that with what actions need to be done, and then quality, you know, because if you lack quality, but you only dream and you only do actions, I feel like the people that has the quality or the position, they won't be able to take you seriously.
No.
Once you know that you secure your quality, you know that our quality is highest in the world. Like you hone your abilities to the point where it's not, it's always, of course, room for more. But I mean, like, it's very hard to see yourself going much further than, okay, quality is unlocked. Who do we want to work with? And then what do we need to do to execute that and make that happen?
Yeah.
And it's not always, I feel like 50-50 or 60-40, where some artists we want to work with have been like, okay, we need to do ABC. And then we kind of like start doing it. And it's not like a lot of work. It's just a few things. And then it happens. And the remaining 60 has been like basically them reaching out to us. Like BTS was, of course, reached out by them because we didn't know who they were. Usher reached out to us because we happened to be in the same, or he was in Dubai, Abu Dhabi for the F1 performance. And we were in Dubai for another performance. And then his team reached out for us to come in and join him on stage for two songs. And at first I thought that mail was a scam, you know? So I was like, I said to my manager, like, can you please confirm this email? Because if this is Usher, we have to go. And then like less than 15 minutes later, he was like, this is legit. This is the team. I'm like, okay. I'm not going to disclose how that deal looked like, but we managed to kind of get out of it really nice. I think one of the most important things was we had a moment of teaching him, teaching Usher. Sounds weird to say. Teaching Usher some of the choreography that we prepared.
Wow.
And then we had to kind of like adjust the show a little bit with how we would interact with him. And then we could make a collab post on Instagram with him. So, and that was basically...
When was this?
I think this was less than 2 years ago. So, but all of that was in the deal, you know? So our manager was like, we do it, but we need to get something out of it like that way. So I feel like that was really cool that their team was down to kind of do an Instagram thing with us. So I think that was one of his first collab in a very long time. Like I didn't see any other collab posts on his profile until we did with him. And so that was exciting. And Diljit also was just, he's blowing up right now in India as well.
He is.
And he's a huge, really like cool artist because he's representing so much more than just singing. He's representing, you know, the Punjabi turban. The turban, the Punjabi culture.
You know, I met him too.
You told me and that's crazy.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
So he's, we both have met him. I was actually sitting next to him on the plane for like 3 hours, but not recognizing him because he didn't wear the turban on the plane. So I was sitting like next to him and looking over, and I was like, no, it's not him. And then he's looking over and we're like looking back and forth. And then later when we land, we meet on set and we're like, it was you. But at that time he said that I was looking over at you because I noticed your earring. And I'm not wearing it now, but I was wearing an earring from Host Violet.
Yeah.
Nice. And then at that's crazy because at that point his team came out and was like, okay, what's the name of the brand? I was like, Host Violet. I typed in your website. I was like, yeah, you should check it out.
And
the fact that you already met him and gave him
a sweater.
Yeah, exactly. So he have been in touch with the brand before, which is really cool.
Or I met him because of the turban day. Because Host Violet designed the Oslo turban,
really,
and then
cool.
I gave it to him as a gift because he's just such a change maker, I would say, of the whole Sikh, you know, religion.
Yes.
And he's like almost creating a new trend, you know, of Indians wearing turbans and being proud of that again. So I think that's 100%. So amazing. And he's so cool.
He is. And very humble.
Very humble. And, you know, just like, I feel he's like the symbol of East meeting West.
Yeah.
Because he's very like, he looks, he dresses so cool. And
it is.
But still, he's always wearing the turban. I think that's cool. So nice.
Fun fact, we have a YouTube show that is called West Meets East.
Oh, you do?
So yeah. So we used to travel when we went to, you know, China and stuff. We would make episode for each city and then we would introduce like people, food, clothes and everything. Yeah. So we're looking to maybe bring that back again. But
you said,
that was really cool.
But I think you guys are also very West meeting East.
Yeah, I would say so, because we are very fond of staying close to our Scandinavian roots, because we're all born in Norway and we all, you know, like had the same, you know, the same breakfast and, you know, the milk and the bread and the cheese and, you know, like we have the same as every Norwegian that you see, but we also had the curry. Yeah. I also had the Thai food in my house, you know, so we had more.
Yeah.
So when we present something, I feel like the result is based on our upbringing as well, which is like Norwegian roots and Norwegian, I would say, quality. Mm. But we add the culture on top of that. And
so
that's in
nice.
The music that we use.
Yeah.
That's in the way we think, even in movements. Some movements are a little bit too much, I would say, like for the West, because... Mm. What does it mean? You know, like some things need to be explained. Mm. But when it comes to Desi, Asian, Southeast Asian culture, things don't have to be explained. Mm. Things have to be felt, you know, and that's two different things.
Yeah.
You know, a dance move can be like, oh, yeah, OK, that makes sense because and then you have like a whole, you know, article about explaining that move. Mm. But in Southeast Asia and Desi culture, it's just it ties in emotions.
Mm.
Oh, that felt like love. Oh, that felt sad. That felt happy. And I feel like our dancing has been very tied to emotion from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I think that is why we could compete with singers back in Norwegian's Got Talent. Because we were like, okay, if we're going to win this, we need to win the hearts.
Mm.
And that's not through technical things. That's through first put our heart out and then we need to connect with them. So it's
That's really beautiful. I that's also what I feel about you guys, you know. I can see an Instagram post of Quickstyle like popping up and I just
really?
I get so happy.
Wow, thank you
because it's so positive, you know.
Thank
that
you
you're
so
moving
much.
It's just so
that's what we aim to
really
do.
Love it.
We want to be a symbol of joy. We want to be a symbol of joy and inclusiveness and just like inspiration in general. That's why we also want to try different things out than dancing as well. So we're doing there's coming more, but we're doing some music as well. But we're not singing, but we're testing the waters.
Okay,
so
exciting.
We're excited to show you guys.
Exciting. But I also think that's so amazing with you guys because you're just so open.
Very.
How do you put all of this together? What is like your your thoughts around that?
I mean, as a founder with the twins of this, we have built this empire of people. You know, there's a lot of talent that we have that we are responsible for to take care of and to make sure they end up in the best possible place. And when you have that responsibility, let's say 200 students or 300 students.
That go to the school?
Yes, with the school.
Yeah.
And they all have individual dreams. Mm. Some want to be teachers. Some want to be, you know, choreographers. Some want to be artists and perform themselves. You know, there's so many dreams.
Yeah.
But we are the ones that's sitting on 20 years of that experience. So we feel automatically that we have a duty to tackle these codes, I would say, you know, like these industry codes, tackle them, condense them, make them easy, and also make it possible.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them is very, I would say, like dreamy. That's why when we did dancing, the only thing we heard from parents, the only thing we heard from people all over, when are you going to quit? Because you can't live off of dance. You know, so we always actually heard people say, when are you going to move on? When are you going to settle and get a real job? You know, this is something that we hear all the time. So one of our inspirations to the things that we do is that we will make sure that this will be our real job.
Yeah.
And by doing that, luckily, everything is just moving in our favor. Fortnite. One of the things that blew Fortnite was dance. Emotes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All the kids in the world started dancing because of Fortnite. You know? And then what came after? TikTok. Everyone, now even adults, cats, dogs, everybody's dancing now because of TikTok.
I am dancing.
You're dancing. It, you know, it made it made people who never thought they would move a bone in their body dance. And so everything is moving towards dance because we as a whole start to get used to watching dance now. You know, we're being trained subconsciously through social media to relate to dance. This is just all in our favor. Now, if you do a clothing campaign or a technology campaign, a car campaign, and everything is very static, something will feel off because we're used to content all the time. You know, we're scrolling through movements, dancing, words, music. So we are used to getting, you know, hit by 100 videos a minute almost by the way we're scrolling, right? So now we are relevant in the multiple industries, fashion industry, tech industry, everywhere, because they need motion designers. They need people who design the movement of not only the people but the camera and the way everything visually that is being made are connecting with people. And this is, we made this our profession and one of our most biggest strength very early on, because I knew that if we can control people's hearts by designing, it could be objects, camera, people, lights. If we could master that, we would never be kind of like jobless. And that has happened, you know, like, so now when we are traveling, it's not like we're doing showcases. We are doing showcases as well, but we're also directing people in commercials. We're also doing showcases. We're doing commercials itself. We're in commercials. We're, there's so much to do now. Whereas when we started, it was only like, you have to do auditions. You might pass or might not. And then that's basically it.
Wow. It's, you know, so, and you came, we're changing. And you came from like, get the real job.
100%. So we're changing this, not only for ourselves, but for everyone who dare to believe, you know. And with this, we also want to include other art forms as well. You know, we want to work with painters, we want to work with musicians, we want to work, we want to pull everyone into this, you know, bouquet of flower that needs to be visible in the industries that are mostly about money, I would say, you know. And I feel like that is when it's okay. That is when people really get valuta get currency for the things that they buy into. You know, if you're gonna be build a relationship with Holzweiler, you don't only want garments, but you want people, you want a lifestyle, you want to understand like, what am I representing right
now?
You want
the feeling.
You want the feeling, exactly. So that is basically us. We want to create this identity through movements for brands.
Wow, amazing. You are, like we all can hear, you're so big thinkers.
Too much thinking.
I absolutely love that about you. So if you just had to mention one thing you're really proud of,
okay,
what would that be?
I would say our school. And it's not because of what we have achieved, but it's just because of all the people that are just putting their trust into us, and also all the people that grow. They come in as like, they don't say any word or anything, and then in less than a year, they're in front of cameras, they're super confident. Every job, that job interview that they are stepping into, they nail it. And it's because they're used to giving themselves out in the world, and their whole body language changes. So I feel like our studio and our school has been, it's the heart, you know, like that's where our heart lies, because there's kids from 5 years, 6 years, up to teachers at the age of 25. And so I feel like that's the only thing that we never want to get rid of, even though no matter what happens to the place, because
it's your core.
It's our core. And it's the only thing we could say 100% that it's fully, fully our heart. There's no business. There is business to run the place, but there's no intention of being a business right now, because we just want to, our intention is just helping generations of creators, basically.
It's so nice. Yeah. It's so nice. I want to, find time to get to that school. I should have my children there. Some of them also really love to dance.
It's mindset has been one of the most important pillars that we have, because you have dancing, but you have mindset as well. You know, how you treat others. Discipline and how you treat others is something that we're very strict with. We don't tolerate, you know, bullying. We're not tolerating people who easily, you know, get ego, filled with ego, or get high with themselves. And that is basically for us to kind of like teach them it's possible to gain fame. It's possible to gain money without becoming, you know, becoming something different. So the school is meant to train people and make people understand how the world works, but also how to be the best type of person in that world as well.
Yeah.
And not the worst type.
So nice. Okay, this has been so nice, Nasir. We have one question at the end that we always end these conversations with. And that's, of course, how do you take a moment?
How I take my moment? Depending on what moment, but I would say I have this thing that I say to myself, and it's a little bit tied in, I would say, like my belief system as well, which is whatever is happening or going to happen is meant to happen. And that gives a little bit room to mess up as well, you know what I mean? Which is nice, because you have prepared. You know, but if you're like, you have prepared and you cannot mess up all the time, it just puts yourself in a corner. So when I say like, whatever happens is meant to happen, and I say that to my teammates as well, it just puts us a little bit at ease, and everything just becomes more heart than the head. And I feel like that is something that has helped me through a lot of things. So that's, I need to do that before I take any moment in my life.
Oh, that's beautiful. Andreas and I actually have something of the same.
Similar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We always have, we say the universe has our back.
Exactly.
So every time, if it's rough or if something, we're like, he can just text me like, the universe has our back. And I can
feel.
So I can feel, yes, because I really believe that.
Right, right.
I don't believe we're here on this planet to suffer. I think we're here to enjoy.
Yeah, definitely.
So
that's nice.
Yeah,
I didn't
amazing.
Know
that. No. But thank you so much for being
here. Thank you so much for having
me. Amazing to have this conversation.
It was.
Yeah.
It's already been 30, 40 minutes. I felt like we spoke for 20 minutes. That's
thank
nice.
You.
Thank you. Thank you.